Well, BHP this week upped the ante in terms of climate change responsibility. Andrew Mackenzie, BHP's CEO, said in a landmark speech in London that he wanted to, quote, reduce the impact of BHP's products. And that meant that sometime next year, no firm date note, the company would set emission targets for its customers. It's taking responsibility for the multiplier effect of the steelmakers who use its coal and so on, which of course raises questions about just how you go about that and what impact, symbolic and otherwise, this announcement will have on the resources sector. Dan Gosher is from the Australian Centre for Corporate Responsibility, where he's Director of Climate and Environment. And John O'Brien is an energy transition partner with Deloitte. He's actually working with BHP on this ambitious project of theirs. Welcome to you both.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's hear a quick bit of Andrew Mackenzie's speech.
So the evidence is abundant. Human-induced global warming is indisputable. Of course the planet will survive, but many species may not. Because as we all know, the world's dependence on fossil fuels carries risks with it that could be existential.
Now, Dan Gosher, I think you were struck by the language in particular.
I was. What we've noticed is that Andrew Mackenzie is now using the language of the climate strikers, essentially the kids who are, larking off school on a Friday to protest against climate change in action.
Yes, and like existential crisis, planet will survive, but many species may not. Does he have, quotes, form on this? Is he known for this?
Absolutely not. I don't think any CEO has form on using this kind of language, and that's why it's so extraordinary.
There was a version of the speech published as an article in the Financial Times, and it did begin with some pretty clear scene setting. And I'm quoting him now. Resource companies today face two inescapable truths. First, the climate is changing, and second, our activities and the use of our products is contributing to that change. So is this a sort of, is it a mea culpa, or I don't know that he's into that really, is he?
I'd like to think that he's finally come around to where the world scientists are and where we need our politicians to be in terms of acknowledging that this is what the science is telling us and that we actually need a very drastic response and almost immediately. So it's taken him and the company, for that matter, quite a long time to get to that position, but it's welcome nonetheless.
Which one assumes means he's got his board along with him.
Absolutely. He wouldn't have made a speech without board approval. Not a speech of that nature.
No. John O'Brien, your specialty at Deloitte's is helping organisations and governments manage the risks and seize the opportunities from the disruption of moving to a low-carbon economy. Out of 10, how would you rate BHP's moves this week?
I think it's really interesting in that it's changed the whole discussion. I don't think this is a really big week, actually. I think it's changed the whole discussion of how industry's going to approach this globally, not just here. It's got headlines here and in London and New York and, I was talking to somebody in Santiago the other day and it was in the paper there.
Really?
So it's changing how big industry is looking at this. And from my point of view, sort of been in this game for about 20 years, it's kind of making the politics less relevant, actually. Politics is going to change the speed of change. It's going to change how fast we go. It can still ramp up and run down, but actually industry is taking over. So I think the multinationals are actually going to start driving climate action, which is relief. That you don't have to rely on politicians to do it anymore, maybe.
Well, I've been saying to people for a while, the real radicals are in business if you open your eyes and see it.
Absolutely.
Now, but the question, I suppose, is all this for the PR value or for the actual impact on climate change?
So I think there's two reasons for BHP's ahead of the game a little bit, but not that far. There's a few others out there. So the real driver for this is climate risk. So and the investors driving climate risk. So there was a UN platform that came out a couple of years ago. How do you report financial risk of climate? And historically, it's been very sort of piecemeal, and they put this basically financial framework. And it started off with the activist investors, like Market Forces and others, kind of going, tell us your climate risk. And actually, then all the big investors started going, yeah, actually, we want to know your risk too. So companies like BHP are now putting out climate risk reports. And then once you put that out, you actually kind of have to do something about it and show how you're reducing that risk and you're recognizing that risk. So that's driving a huge amount of activity, I think. Mm-hmm. Um, and again, across any big listed multinational, that pressure is starting to come. The other bit, I think, is it just greenwashing? I think in this day and age, it's not possible. If you put out bold statements, you're going to be called to account if you don't deliver. And people will be out there, and if they don't deliver, they're going to be in trouble. It would be my suggestion.
Yes, Dan can hardly stop laughing. let's just nail down though what BHP's actually talking about doing, because there was an investment announcement we'll come to in a moment. Could you explain the Scope 3 emissions, please, John, that he was particularly referring to?
Yeah, so there's three types of emissions under the sort of greenhouse gas frameworks. Scope 1 is stuff that you burn on your site, or you create actually on your site. So if you have a boiler, or you've got you're burning coal or gas or something like that, it actually comes from your site. Scope 2 is where you buy electricity, and that's somebody else has made the emissions at a power station, and that's Scope 2. So that's, and they're all very controllable. So you have control of Scope 1 and Scope 2, and that's particularly for the resource companies and most companies, actually, that's where they're putting targets, is what the stuff we can control. Scope 3 is everything that's kind of along the value chain. So for some companies, so in the US, Walmart would be a really good case study. So they've all their emissions are upstream. So all their suppliers create stuff, and they create emissions. And Walmart is sort of a case study where they've sort of imposed standards on the people who supply them. And they've said, oh, actually, if you want to sell to Walmart, and if you're in the US, you do, you're going to have to start doing some things and reducing up there. For people like BHP, it's all downstream.
Yes.
So it's all their customers. And that's more of a challenge, because it's hard to tell your customers what to do.
And I think they estimate that Scope 3 emissions are almost 40 times larger than the 16.5 million, I'm just reading, million tonnes of carbon emissions directly generated. So, I mean, that just does give you a bit of a sense of it, doesn't it?
Yep.
But potentially the impact of trying to rein in customers' carbon emissions is quite does the mind in a little bit. I don't know how you do that, really.
So that you can't impose standards unless you want to shut the business down. So, it's going to be around cooperation and collaboration and doing technology studies and working out. So the majority of that is from making steel. So iron ore, you combine with coking coal and you make steel. And that's actually where most of the emissions are happening. And BHP sells iron ore, and it sells coking coal. And so what technology solution is there to get rid of the emissions out of the steelmaking process? And there's probably one proper way of doing it is using hydrogen, but there's a couple of other options as well. So I think it's going to, and I really have no idea, but it's going to be looking at technology solutions. So I think it's more about cooperation,
which they
with
share with those customers that they share the cost of.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be more about sort of education and collaboration and bringing people along. It's not going to be. It would be surprising for somebody to impose standards on their customers, because their customers may not be their customers anymore.
Quite so. Dan, what about the $400 million investment in emissions reduction technologies? That was, I think that's over 5 years. It's about 1% of BHP's $80 billion a year revenue turnover. So that's not a huge deal. But, is that the sort of, have we seen something like this before?
it's a drop in the ocean, really, for a company of BHP's size. And to answer your question, yes, we have seen this before. So if you go back to 2005, BHP participated in a CCS research project, so that's carbon capture research, in the United States with the US government, which over the course of 10 years was an abject failure. BHP has also been contributing to the Coal 21 Fund, which is designed to invest in carbon capture and research in Australia. It's had very limited success, despite spending close to $400 million since 2006. So BHP has form in this area, and if it was serious about CCS, it would be spending far more than $400 million over 5 years.
Yes, he did go on to note that the resources his sector provides, power and steel, have been essential to people's well-being and advancement. So he's still backing his industry in.
That's right. But just to pick up on John's point before about the Scope 3 emissions, while steel does make up a large share of that Scope 3, BHP is also selling thermal coal, which is used to generate electricity. It's also selling oil and gas, which is obviously used to, you know, drive cars and all the rest of it. So there is still a significant problem there that isn't related to steel. And yet, you know, Andrew McKenzie hasn't announced plans to, you know, stop exploring for oil in the Gulf of Mexico, for instance, or he hasn't announced plans to close his thermal coal mines. So, yeah, you've got to take it with a grain of salt. If he's spending $400 million to sort out the steel emissions, he's still got to work out the problem with the coal, oil and gas that he's selling.
But he's got to have a company, ISPM, or do you not care about that?
No, of course I care. We're shareholders too. But as he's acknowledged himself, the future of thermal coal and gas is challenged. And, you know, he's acknowledged that he sees opportunities in commodities like copper and nickel, whose use will increase as electric vehicles are taken up and so on. So this isn't just about, you know, shutting businesses down. This is also about seeing the opportunities.
It's looking, being a good CEO and looking into the future. So John O'Brien from Deloitte, how do you expect this is being received inside the resources sector, this next level emissions goal, which has really been a bridge too far, hasn't it, up till now?
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch the reactions this week of, you know, or certainly they're from the media anyway. And, you know, people sort of, you know, in, you know, almost stepping back in horror going, no, don't go there. You know, that's, you can't talk about that. And I think where, I mean, it's the activist investors and then the mainstream are not that far behind are actually, it's, you know, scope three are going to be, everyone's going to be talking about scope three in the next couple of years. So there's been a lot of pressure on scope one and scope two in the last while for the resources companies. And a number of them are making, you know, good progress on that. And
yeah, but say something like Rio Tinto, their traditionally big competitor, yep, along with Vale in South America. They've previously said they would not go to this next stage of emissions targets.
Yes, they've said, and it's sort of interesting. The language is very careful around this. So it's, you know, it's not going to be imposing targets. It's setting some targets, and Rio Tinto have said, look, we can't control Scope 3. But I would have no doubt that they're also thinking about the long term. And it's kind of coming back to competitive advantage and having a business. If, you know, there is quite strong, you know, kind of quite a strong view that, you know, give at the moment thermal coal is, you know, really having, you know, a lot of pressure on thermal coal. There's plenty of thermal coal being sold and being used. And over the next little while, it's going to start to wind down. So certainly in Australia and then internationally.
Well, I mean, things are shifting fast, aren't they? Suncorp yesterday announced they'll no longer insure thermal coal projects.
Yep.
I thought that was quite remarkable, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And but it's, so, you know, if you look, so thermal coal kind of is, you know, the under attack to start with, and then it's going to be coking coal. You know, and then it's going to be natural gas. And then, you know, and if you can't use coking coal, then you can't use iron ore. So yeah, potentially there's huge risk of asset values being, you know, kind of destroyed, really. If you can't use iron ore, no one's going to, it's not worth anything.
Look, just one more quick one. Legally, Dan, is this doable? I mean, I would have thought it's also possible that could even be perceived as a restraint of trade. You know, if you were a customer and you really did not like this sense of BHP dictating to you.
Well, I think there's other examples from other sectors where you can impose restrictions on customers about what they can and can't do with your own product. You know, even if you think about weapons companies, for instance, some companies just won't sell into certain countries because of human rights abuses, for instance. So it's not completely uncommon. I think the bigger issue here is I guess the policies that drive a lot of those Scope 3 emissions. So if you think about the emissions from electricity generation, BHP has played a long game in affecting the policies that would essentially reduce those emissions, and particularly in this country. So if you look at BHP's roles with its industry associations, for instance, it's funded groups like the Minerals Council of Australia, the Queensland Resources Council, which have stood in the way of moving away from coal-fired power. So they actually have an obligation to not just reduce those emissions, but actually to stop interfering in the policy process.
You're never satisfied, are you? This is the next stage we have to go. Dan Gosher and John O'Brien, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Dan Gosher from the Australian Centre for Corporate Responsibility. John O'Brien, an energy transition partner with Deloitte. Your thoughts, most welcome. But coming up next, the massive changes in Hong Kong.